Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, I'm James Rogers, and this is the History Hit World Wars podcast, a podcast dedicated to that turbulent period in history between 1914 and 1945. Now, by March 1942, the British position in Burma had rapidly weakened, deteriorated, with the capital Rangoon and its vital port lost. As the Japanese pushed relentlessly forward, the remaining, surviving Allied troops carried out a five-month slogging fighting retreat through to India across 1,000 miles of dense and difficult terrain. Once in India, however, the British and Indian troops, well, they had to stand firm as part of a broader push by the Southeast Asia Command to try and reverse the losses in the region. Fought between March 8th and July 18th, 1944, the battles of Imphal and Kohima on the Indian border were a turning point in this most grueling campaign. In Kohima alone, a few thousand British and Indian troops faced up to 15,000 Japanese soldiers as the Allies held a tight defensive grip onto this important strategic chokehold. At some points, this saw fighting as close as 200 metres away from each other. In this episode, first recorded for Dan Snow's History Hit, we welcome award-winning historian, writer and broadcaster James Holland to discuss these decisive battles that led to this defeat of the Japanese in the region and acted as a springboard for Allied victory and the regaining of Burma.
Today to talk about your TV projects, which you have done for HistoryHit.tv. When you went to Northeast India,
yes,
to places where very few people have been for decades, but very few historians have been for decades.
Yeah, well, it's really interesting. So when we think of the Burma campaign, we think of it all being in sort of Burma and in the jungle and all the rest of it. But actually, one of the key, most crucial battles of all was actually around Imphal. And added onto that was the Battle of Kohima, which is part of the bigger Imphal battle, but sometimes is sort of seen as a separate battle. But actually, it's one big campaign, one big battle that happens in the spring and summer of 1944. And that is actually in Northeast India, as you correctly say. And actually, it's in Manipur State and Nagaland. Well, Nagaland we have been able to get to for a little bit. So it's been possible to go to the tennis court at Kohima, the infamous tennis court there. And you can go to Kohima reasonably easily. It's still not the easiest place to get to, but you can get there. But Manipur State, absolutely not. There's been an insurgency there. It's been very difficult to get in. And when we went there back in March and filmed this programme, we were among the very, very first people since the end of the war to go to some of the corners of this battlefield. And it's really interesting. One of the episodes in the Battle of Imphal was this stand that took place at a place called Shangshak. Now, Shangshak is this tiny village on the top of a hill in the middle of this sort of rolling jungle hills. You know, when you're thinking slightly exotic kind of Burmese jungle and hills and, you know, fighting the Japanese in the Second World War, this is what you're thinking. It just doesn't disappoint in any way whatsoever. Windy, wiggly tracks up to this kind of sort of, you know, wooden shack village with corrugated roofs and palms and ferns and very sort of green and fecund and everything and dusty and sort of, it was just the most amazing place. No one's ever heard of Shangshak. It's just completely erased from history. And yet it's one of the great British / Indian stands of the Second World War. And I was absolutely gobsmacked. No one has been there. And even when, before we got there, they kept saying, our guys out there kept saying, well, we're going to try and get you to Shangshak, but we might not be able to. And I was sort of, you know, Shangshak, you know, whatever, you know, couldn't care less. Because I hadn't sort of, at that point, properly read up about it. And then I did, and I was like, God, please get me to Shangshak. Please get me to Shangshak. And we got there. And it was literally, we got permission the day before. And just to get there, we had to go through kind of something like three checkpoints with the Assam rifles to get up there. It was absolutely amazing.
So I was so jealous of this trip. I was absolutely desperate to come. But we'll go on another adventure again soon, I'm sure. But tell me about the campaign. Kim Imphal, the Japanese pushing into, having driven the British out of Southeast Asia, humiliating Malaysia, Singapore, Burma. They're now pushing into the heart of the British Raj. Is this a full invasion of India, or is this just a sort of reconnaissance in force?
Well, do you know what? It's actually a bit of both. And the interesting thing about this, and the interesting thing about the whole kind of Burma campaign, Southeast Asia campaign, is I think people kind of know little bits about it. You know, they've read that brilliant George MacDonald Fraser book called A Safe Out Here. You know, they've heard of Slim, they've heard of the Arakan, you know, they've maybe heard of Kohima and Imphal, but no one quite knows how it all fits together. So just very, very quickly, you know, what happens is they get pushed out of Burma in first half of 1942. Then there's a monsoon. So, this is jungle. This is the infrastructure in this area is absolutely zip. There's no roads. There's just muddy tracks. And when the monsoon comes, you can't pass them. There's huge wide rivers. It's completely remote. It's very hard to supply the front line. So in 1942, they try and get into the Arakan, which is now Rohingya state. You know, this is where all the Rohingyas are coming from. That's in the news at the moment. This is northwest Burma. And they try and go in and make an absolute hash of it, get thrown back again. So then they've got to kind of wait another year to kind of, until the monsoons are over before they can try again. So the summer of 1943, it's monsoon season again, because they can't do anything. But the morale of the army is absolutely rock bottom. Also, lots and lots of disease. So people are really suffering malaria. And that is getting you out of the battlefront and taking you quite a long way to hospitals in Bengal and all the rest of it. It's a really inefficient way of fighting. And also people just not properly trained for what they're doing. They're still doing kind of, you know, standard kind of infantry drills and artillery drills that you would use in Europe, which, of course, just doesn't work at all in the jungle. And what the Japanese are very, very good at doing is sort of infiltration tactics and sort of thinking outside the box and doing non-orthodox kind of tactics. What the British realise is that actually if you can harness air power as well, then suddenly you're in business, because not only can you can train and you start using the jungle as your friend rather than seeing it as your enemy, you can also hold your ground and resupply from air. So Spitfires start arriving in the autumn of 1943, and they're better than the Japanese Army Air Force Oscars, which are a bit like Zeros, but you know, that's their mainstay fighter. And Spitfires are better than that. And they put on ground, the RAF bring over ground units and all that kind of stuff, and radar and so on, and ground controllers. And suddenly they start getting control of the skies. The RAF starts getting control of the skies, which means you can start doing airdrops with Dakota transports and all the rest of it. And this is where the Americans come in, and they're brilliant at it. I mean, lots of British crews as well, but overall run by the Americans. And so they have this great victory in the Arakan in the early part of 1944, where the Japanese try to outflank the British, try to surround them. The British hold their ground. The British Indians hold their ground. It's a place called the Admin Box, and win and decimate the Japanese. Because the Japanese they're able to move fast because they're very lightly armed and they're very lightly equipped, and that also means very lightly equipped with food. The whole point is you capture, you defeat your enemy and feed off them. If you deny them that food, then they pretty soon start to kind of degrade in a trip pretty darn quick. And that's what happens.
So not unlike the Soviets on the Eastern Front, you just, by not panicking when you're surrounded, just standing your ground, realising you might lose communications with your rear areas for a bit, but basically it's okay, your enemy are overextended, you can actually hold them back.
Exactly that. And the architect of this really is Bill Slim, who is acting Eastern Army commander in the late summer and early autumn of 1943. And then Mountbatten comes along. And Mountbatten is a shock appointment to many people. You know, he's young, he's got a kind of fractionally mixed record. But he's young, he's inexperienced, really, and he's suddenly made Supreme Allied Commander in Southeast Asia. And he comes along, meets Slim at Slim's headquarters in Barrackpore, which is just north of Calcutta. And he goes, I like the cut of your jib, you're my man to be the new army commander. And he goes, well, you know, don't you think you want to check with a few other people first? He goes, no, I'm the boss, I do what I like. I like you, you're my man. And he appoints him, and it's a really, really fantastically shrewd decision and appointment. And Slim has already been trying to work out how you get the army out there kind of back on track. Vigorous jungle training, forward malaria units so that you're not kind of taken out for 3 months, you're out for kind of 10 days. Everyone trained in jungle tactics, from, you know, cooks to mechanics to everybody. Better food, better supply units, all this kind of stuff. There's 30 different ration scales in what becomes 14th Army every single day, with all your kind of Rajputs and Sikhs and Punjabis and Nepalese and so on and so forth. I mean, really, it's a kind of logistics challenge that just makes your head hurt. But the first victory, the first time that these new theories, this new training, this new approach, air supplies and all the rest of it, is put to the test, is at the admin box in February 1944. And it is a fantastic turning point. And it makes Slim realise that actually he can win here. And the thought was, the only way to win in Burma is by outflanking with amphibious operations, which, you know, on paper, Britain and the Allies are kind of well equipped with. But actually, because of the huge demands of Anzio in Italy, Anvil in southern France, of D-Day, of course, you know, all that shipping's been sucked up. And, of course, what's going on in the Pacific. There's not much shipping left. So Slim is basically told, you're going to have to go do it the hard way. And what he realises is that actually what he should do is lure the Japanese into northeast India, around Imphal, where it's surrounded by mountains, surrounded by hills, but around Imphal there is this plain. And where's a plain, you can have airfields. So six airfields around the town of this otherwise rather insignificant town of Imphal. And so his plan, and it's a really, really daring one, an audacious one, is to lure the Japanese in, then retreat to within, you know, comparatively small distance from the centre of Imphal. Make sure you don't lose the airfields. But as you retreat, do a fighting retreat, which really grinds down the attacking force, the Japanese, so that by the time the main battle really happens, they're already completely stuffed. You know, they're exhausted, they're running short of ammunition, their supply lines are absolutely enormous. Then you pour in more supplies yourself by air, and then you counterattack. And in a nutshell, that is what happens. But because this is war, and because even the best plans go awry, it doesn't go quite as smoothly. And what's really interesting is that the Japanese high command, they think of the operation in Imphal, which is known as Operation Hago, they see it as just a means of knocking back the British so that whatever happens, they don't invade Burma. But Mutaguchi, who is the area, you know, the 15th Army commander, what he recognises is that if they can actually not just take Imphal, but take Dimapur, which is 120 miles to the north on a single road that leads from Dimapur through Kohima down to Imphal, if they can get up to Dimapur, which is the gateway to Bengal, then Bengal, which is notoriously left-wing and anti-British, might rise up in rebellion against the British, and the whole of the rest of India will follow. It means that all the American bases in Assam, which is supplying air supplies to the Chinese across what's known as the hump over the Himalayas, those airfields will be captured. So the supply lines to China will be stopped. Suddenly, they might actually turn around the whole war. And actually, that's not as far-fetched as it might sound. So although the Imperial High Command has said, just get Imphal and this is a holding operation, this is an offensive defensive operation, what Mutaguchi is thinking is, I could be the daddy here. I could really kind of, you know, be the hero. I could save Japan. And don't forget, this is 1944. This is a time where, you know, fortunes of the Japanese are going sort of badly downhill.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Okay, so they advance into towards Kohima and Imphal. Now, what is it, from what you saw out there on the ground, do you get a sense of the... Did it give you a different sense, a more vivid sense, of why those battles have got such an extraordinary reputation?
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that is just abundantly clear when you see it is the space, the size, the scale of it, and just how remote it is. It's remote in March 2017 when we were careering around. Just think how remote it is in you know, 1944. I mean, I remember standing at the cemetery in Kohima, and there was this grave of this young guy from Dorset, you know, just down the road from us, Dan. And it said, to the world you were a soldier, but to us you were the world. And you just think of this poor guy, and you think of his parents back home, and you think how far he is. I mean, this is like a different universe. And so you're constantly reminded all the time you're out there of just how far this is. And, you know, at one point we came across this track, this road that had actually been built by naggers at the behest of British engineers back in 1943-44. And it is, you're absolutely classic. We've all seen the photos of it, dirt road hewn through the jungle, you know, carved out the side of a hill. And you're suddenly thinking, "What? This is a World War II road. That this is what we're talking about here." And you're thinking, it's a nice dry day here, you know, the sun is beating down, add a little bit of rain, whoa, you know, you're not going to get a Jeep up this. I mean, it's just, you're going nowhere. So the logistics of it are just absolutely mind-boggling. But you're also just really struck by the audacious nature of the slim plan. Of just, you really need nerves of steel. You really need to be confident that all your guys, all your corps commanders, your divisional commanders, your brigade commanders, your battalion commanders, and down, all get it. They know what they've got to do. And the synchronizing of that is, that is really challenging. It's a really, really ballsy plan. And it almost doesn't work, because when the Japanese first attack, they attack a week earlier than the British intelligence has led them to believe. So they're slightly caught off. And there's this amazing guy called Punch Cowan. He's a corps commander, divisional commander. And he reacts quickly, and he knows what he's supposed to do, but he realizes he needs to do what he needs to do a week earlier than he thought he was going to have to do it. And he organizes his men, and they start retreating down the Tidim Road towards Imphal, and they do it absolutely brilliantly. And it is this really decisive moment. The other one is, of course, is at Shangchat, which I keep banging on about, where the 50th Indian Parachute Brigade are making a stand, commanded by Brigadier Hope Thompson, who is 31. I mean, can you imagine? You're in charge of a, you know, this was just a holding position. This was not supposed to, they were not supposed to be in the battle line. Much bigger, stronger Japanese forces come across the jungle, cross country, and attack. And the first Indian troops that meet them are absolutely decimated. And then Hope Thompson makes this stand at this village called Changchak. And it holds up the Japanese for about 4 or 5 days. And the speed with which they get to Shangchak is something like, you know, a week or something from the Burmese border. It then takes them a further 10 days to get to Kohima, because they're already so exhausted and just sort of degraded by the experience of this stand at Shangchak, which makes all the difference in the subsequent battle that happens at Kohima, because it is, you know, it is about hours and minutes and days, you know, the difference between victory and defeat there.
We should just quickly mention the tennis court, which is probably the thing that people remember the most. Yes. What is the tennis court, the myth of people fighting from one side of the tennis court to another for days on end? Is that true?
Yeah, it absolutely is. It really, really is. And it's amazing, because, you know, Kohima in 1944 was this tiny little outpost. It was a kind of sort of Naga village. Then it was a whole load of sort of British huts. There was a district commissioner's hut. He had this sort of bungalow. And behind him on this terrace, out of this kind of hill, this jungled hill, was this tennis court that went with his, you know, district commissioner's colonial bungalow. Now it's a kind of heaving concrete jungle of 250,000 people. And it's kind of quite hard to kind of sort of take that away. You need some super CGI to kind of reduce it to what it used to be. But yeah, it was. This was one of the most bitter players, Garrison Hill. And it's amazing to be there. And actually, one of the guys I was with did find a .303 shell, rifle shell.
Yes, you find all sorts of interesting things. What else is in the landscape? What was that? I mean, you went to the village of the stand that I now can't pronounce, so I'm not going to try. But
Shangchak.
But what were the other particular places that were very special that you got to and felt that time hadn't really moved on very much?
Yeah, it was interesting. There was a couple of places where we did a kind of then and now. So I had a whole load of photographs from 1944. And it was this one place where there's this river crossing. And actually, it's the, I think it was the 5th Indian Division, a crossing. And there's a very, very comparatively famous photograph of these Sherman tanks with infantry crossing this river. And you suddenly go, oh my God, That's it. And, it, you know, it's unchanged. I mean, it is, you could just half close your eyes, picture the troops, picture the tank, and you are there. It was absolutely amazing. But there were two places. There was Shenham Saddle, which is on the kind of eastward side of Imphal. So there's a plain, then the hills sort of rise up all around it. And I guess it's kind of, you know, maybe kind of 35, 40 miles from Imphal. Suddenly you climb up out of the plain. And there you are on these hills. And again, it's just unchanged. You know, you can see the road sort of wiggling around the hills. That's the road through which a lot of the British came in 1942 when they retreated. It's along the road that a lot of the Japanese advanced in 1944. It's along that road that the British re-enter Burma in late 1944 and 1945. You know, this is one of the great thoroughfares. And you're standing right on it. And we're finding all these trenches. I mean, you know, I've been on so many World War II battlefields. There is nothing to touch this in terms of original trenches, mortar pits. Okay, so the grass and stuff has all grown over and bamboo has all grown over it. But you can walk around in it. I mean, they are there. And it's the same at Changshan. We found all these trenches. No one has set foot in these since end of the war, I would say.
So there you go. James Holland, World War II world expert on the Second World War, says it's the best Second World battlefield you've ever been to.
Absolutely, definitely. Yeah, it was amazing.
And now he's swilling his pint. James, let's finish up by saying, what was the impact of this battle?
The impact was actually huge because it really, really did consign Japanese hopes to, you know, the dustbin. I mean, they just weren't going to go anywhere. And at the end of it, they were absolutely smashed. At this time, there was no bigger Japanese force that had been engaged anywhere in the world than at came in and fought. And if you sort of think about it, that does actually make sense because there's a limit on these kind of Pacific atolls, even somewhere quite big like Guadalcanal. You can only fit so many people on those islands. But obviously in a landmass like Burma, in India, you can put as many as you like. So, you know, we're talking a lot of men and a lot of them just never get home. And the trails of the Japanese as they retreat, they finally retreat these emaciated bodies just left by the side of the road, absolutely starving. You know, we went to, as a companion piece to our film, we went to interview the brilliant Robin Rowlands, which I think is going to be coming on History Hit TV soon as well. And Robin was amazing because he said that the thing that affected him most of the whole experience, and he was, you know, he was at the admin box, he was at Kohima, he was then in the final victory in Burma in 1945. The worst thing he ever saw was this waste of detritus from the retreating Japanese leaving Kohima, this road passing through these valleys, and it's just everywhere you look, there were just dead Japanese, rubbish, litter, a kind of, you know, it's the Road of Bones from Fergal Keane's book. I mean, that's what he's talking about. I mean, just absolutely horrendous. And they never recovered from that, but they were still a pretty formidable force in Burma itself, and the victory that was subsequently Slim managed to pull off in 1945 is another just amazing story. I mean, you know, we've put Slim on this pedestal, as most people who know what they're talking about would say that Slim is the greatest general we've had in the Second World War, if not ever. And now that I've had a chance to look at these battles in some detail, you know, it's hard to argue against that. I mean, he really was the complete general. And actually, the battle plan that he puts together for the final victory in Burma to completely, finally, 100% eradicate the Japanese in Burma is every bit as brilliant as the one for Imphal, and audacious and daring and ballsy. I mean, just really, really good. And it's what makes a complete general is when you're tactically sound, you get the big pitch, you get the strategy, but you also have that operational clout as well. And that is what Slim has. He's got the charisma and boldness of the best generals. He's got the tactical nous. He sees the big picture, but operationally, whew, you know, that's what you need in that part of the world. And he is second to none.
Speaking of second to none, James, thank you for coming on this podcast. You are second to none when it comes to the Second World War.
Always a pleasure. And always a pleasure to meet in this pub. It's not the first time.
We have
semi-regular
strategy meetings. Strategy meetings in this pub.
Hey,
And before you go, remember, as a Warfare listener, you get a special discount at History Hit. Subscribers get access to blissfully uninterrupted ad-free podcasts and thousands of hours of history documentaries. You've got everything from the American Revolution to my own documentaries like Traces of War, Weapons of War, and 24 Hours in Normandy, where I follow in the footsteps of the Green Howards on D-Day, from their beach landings to being awarded the Victoria Cross, and all the way through their first day where they made it 7 miles inland, further than any other British or American unit. So head over to historyhit.com/subscribe or follow the link in the show notes and use the code WARFARE to get 50% off your next 3 months. That's the code WARFARE to get 50% off. And if you're an Apple listener, you can subscribe for new ad-free episodes within the app. So give it a go. I know you're gonna love it.